Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Still the voice of the voiceless. Ramadan Mubarak to all the faithful Muslims of the world. May God shower peace and blessings upon all the righteous people. Tonight, it's the big conversation. It's the great debate. But of course, it can only be either of those if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. The number is 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or no one will understand either of us, and I'll have to move swiftly on. You can also SMS the show on 4478-00-8066, or you can email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. You can even tweet us, this being the 21st century, at comment_presstv. The best of the emails, the texts, and the tweets, for that matter, will come up here on the comment wall, if they pass muster, that is. Now, tonight, we're discussing two important questions. The first is Yemen, where a Saudi American assault upon the poorest country in the Arab world, one of the poorest countries in the entire world, is under intense bombardment. Thousands have been killed, thousands have been maimed, scores of thousands have been displaced as refugees inside their own country, and some of the most precious of the old city of Sana'a has been destroyed by the world's most expensive aeroplanes, firing the world's most expensive weaponry, coordinated by the world's most powerful country, the United States of America, and of course paid for by one of the world's richest countries, Saudi Arabia. And what it's all about, not many people could tell you. They certainly could tell you, if they had any sense, that the official story is not the real one, that this has nothing to do with religion, it has nothing to do with sect or confession. This is much more of an attempt by Saudi Arabia to defend what it feels are ever encroaching pressures upon it, which in truth are intrinsic, which are in truth endemic inside the nature of Saudi society. Its time has passed. Saudi Arabia, as a brute dictatorship, which executed by sword its 100th prisoner this year, and it's only June, and which is ruled by elderly kleptocrats who have to feed the squawking mouths of 30,000 Saudi princes before they even begin to feed anybody else, to use any of the bounty that God gave the country in the form of its oil riches. Saudi society will soon produce an upheaval which will overthrow this dictatorship once and for all. And this is an attempt in Yemen to forestall the forces, many of them, and many and varied, many and contradictory forces that will ultimately bring the Saudi regime down. But this being the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo, and we have a saying in English that you have met your Waterloo, which means you have met potentially your decisive defeat, your final defeat. I believe that Yemen will be Saudi Arabia's Waterloo. And so the question which is posed, what would it take for Saudi Arabia to stop bombing Yemen, is of course a difficult one to answer. An outbreak of common sense might be one, a decision by the United States of America that this was all too compromising to the United States' overarching interests elsewhere in the Persian Gulf and elsewhere in the Arab world. It might be that the Yemenis inside the Saudi armed forces, a very big percentage of the Saudi armed forces are Yemeni, may take matters into their own hand as they see their country being destroyed by the country whose uniform they themselves are wearing. That's why Saudi Arabia will never send soldiers into Yemen, not just because the Yemen irregular forces, the Ansarullah forces, who are the Houthi and the army of Yemen, which is loyal to the previous president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, would beat them, but also because the army of Saudi Arabia cannot be depended upon, certainly not in pulverizing Yemen. And it's telling that neither the army of Pakistan nor the army even of Egypt will be going to fight on the ground in Yemen either. There are limits to what they feel they owe Saudi Arabia, and those limits definitely include entering ultimately what would be a losing and bloody and costly war with Yemen. Because I'm here to tell you that just like the Afghans, the Yemenis are pretty good at fighting, and some of them even enjoy it. So I don't believe that Saudi Arabia will prevail in Yemen. So I'm not sure what it would take for Saudi Arabia to stop bombing Yemen except a realization that this was so. The second question is on the scandalously neglected question of the Rohingya people in Burma. On the eve of two important demonstrations in England, one is in Birmingham and the other in Bradford. I'm speaking at the Bradford one at Centenary Square at 7 p.m. on Saturday night, if you can be there. The speakers are myself, Salma Yaqub, Yvonne Ridley, Rohingya speakers, and others. It's going to be a big outdoor rally to try and break into the media, which has neglected what is effectively an ongoing genocidal campaign to wipe out the Rohingya people from Burma. Just to recap on what's happened, scores, maybe hundreds of thousands of the Rohingya are in flight, are on the cruel seas, in leaking, sinking boats, trying to find somewhere that will rescue them from their plight. The others, many of them, hundreds of thousands of them, are in camps where they are regularly threatened by the pogrom of the Burmese nationalist fanatics who believe them to be impure, who believe them to be not Burmese, even though their families have lived there for centuries and once had their own independent kingdom there in what is now the state of Burma, which is ruled by a military junta. Now, the question, is the world neglecting the Rohingya Muslims, is an easy one to answer. The answer is yes. A better question would be why? And the answer to that, I'm afraid, is filthy lucre, or in a different case to which I shall turn in a moment, votes. In the case of the filthy lucre, in one of the last conversations, it might even have been the last conversation I ever had with Tony Blair, he told me that if he could, he would invade several countries. One of them was Burma. He said he would, if he could, invade Burma in order to get rid of the military dictatorship there. He's now working for that military dictatorship. Why? Because there's a lot of money and resource in Burma that many people want to get their hands on. And that's true of most of the countries of the world. They want to exploit the quiescent, downtrodden population of Burma in order to get their goods, in order to steal their wealth, as empires always do. Now, there is a woman called Aung San Suu Kyi, who was a Nobel Prize winner and who was widely admired around the world because of her dignity under oppression by that very same Burmese junta. Now she is free. She's traveling. She's speaking. But she's not saying a word about the Rohingya. She is tacitly, therefore, complicit in the massacres of the Rohingya people. And for that reason, I think she should hang her head in shame. But she's doing it because she doesn't want to lose votes amongst the fanatic Burmese nationalists with their ideals of racial purity, even though she herself is a victim of those very vicious ideas. They tried to ban her for running for the presidency of the country because they introduced a law that anyone who had a child who wasn't 100% Burmese could not run for president. And of course, her son is half English and has a British passport as well as a Burmese passport. So she knows how vicious this nationalism is, but she's not prepared to say a single word about it. So is the world neglecting the Rohingya Muslims? Hussein is in Bahrain with the first call of the night. Hussein, welcome.
Hello, George. Good afternoon to you.
And you, sir. Go ahead. Thank you.
And it's Ramadan Mubarak. Mubarak, Mubarak to you and everybody.
Thank you.
And your topics regarding Saudi Arabia with the Yemen war.
Ah, yes.
Okay. It's assumed that how long they go on hitting by air to Yemen? How long? There will be a limit. It has to be seen. But the Saudis, they are living as an old, very old, like old type of tribe they are, and they don't think that we are living at the jet age. We are living at this moment, and somebody has to tell them that this bombing leads to where? If they don't stop this, this may go to the region. Whole region will come into the effect.
Yes.
And America should give them some kind of kind of advice that this war will not lead to them good.
No, and it's continuing into Ramadan. Ramadan has begun, and the killing is still continuing. Hussein?
Yeah, I'm listening, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
No, you're absolutely correct, my friend. No good will come of this, even for Al Saud. But I'm not sure the Americans are yet ready to tell them to stop. Of course, if the Americans told them to stop, look, these are some of the great treasures of Sana'a, demolished, destroyed in front of our eyes, some of the most beautiful ancient Arabic buildings anywhere being destroyed, and the people underneath them, 2,600 at least killed, according to the United Nations. But I think the real danger, Hussein, is that this will spread in the region. It will spread in Bahrain, will spread in Saudi Arabia itself. It will lead to increased tensions with other countries in the Persian Gulf. And the United States would then have to calibrate whether it was ready to risk all these things, don't you think? Okay, Hussein in Bahrain, thanks for that call. We're talking about the Rohingya people in Burma, but we're also talking about this disaster going on in Yemen. Alistair is in the UK. let's hear from him. Alistair, welcome.
Hello, George. How are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, I think that the Saudi Arabian question and the Yemen, as we know, basically, the history of the world tells us that basically factions from the West and factions from the East don't mix very well. And it's ever since the United States got involved in Saudi Arabia in the late 1930s when they wanted their oil, that the whole battle between some Muslim factions and the West and so-called Christian factions have started. Now, in relation to Yemen, I think that what needs to happen is that America needs to admit its mistakes and then work with whichever parties to start getting some sort of peace accord off the ground so that innocent people can be saved from these terrible airstrikes and the so-called terrible weapons they're using as well, the phosphorus bomb.
Yes, they're using phosphorus, they're using other banned weapons. It is vicious, it's murderous, it's on a defenseless civilian population. I mean, what was the military target there, Alistair?
Exactly. I mean, I think that what we need to realise in this world of ours is that most people, when they turn to violence, are actually motivated by greed, whether it be on an individual level, a community level, or a country level. And therefore, what it all boils down to at the end of the day is simply about one country wanting more than another in order to, pack up its treasure houses full of money. Mm. And that needs to be stated very openly by responsible governments and responsible individuals with lots of that can affect things, world leaders,
well, of course,
in order to try and address the problem.
We don't have such a responsible government, unfortunately, Alistair. Our government is supporting Saudi Arabia in this murderous rampage in the Yemen, as it has supported the dictators elsewhere in the region, as it has supported even Al-Qaeda directly now, and ISIS indirectly, at the very least, in Iraq and Syria. Alistair, thanks for that call. Reza is also in the UK. Let's hear from him. Reza, welcome.
Mr. George, how are you?
By the grace of God, I'm good. What would you like to talk about?
I was going to talk about Yemen,
Yes.
Innocent people killing every second, every day,
Yeah.
I was going to say, they kept Russia involved in Ukraine and then like paralyzed Russia at the minute, and China involved in. So, and then we don't hear anything in media in Western countries, about what's happening there, I think Russia and China should put more weight behind United Nations. And then this United Nations, this general, is one of the weakest in history I've ever seen, since
I've
been
born. He's pretty pathetic. Don Ki Moon, as one of our callers called him, inadvertently.
So embarrassing,
Yeah.
He's weakest ever.
Yes.
And I think, we are not worried about Yemenis because they are most warriors. They are one of the warriors Arab world, they are just all warriors. And then Arabistan would be punished soon. And then will be put a big price for that.
So what would it take, do you think?
By the grace of God, at the minute they're talking in the Geneva, so might be stopped for a while. But I think the most strength comes from Russia and China. They should put their weight behind.
Well, I don't know what the state of play at the United Nations is. Maybe somebody could call in and say, so far as I know, there's no effort by the United Nations except to count the dead. I don't know what the attitude of Russia and China is, but I will tell you this, Reza. Russia's definitely not paralyzed. Anybody who saw the military parade in Moscow this week would know that Russia's very, very far from paralyzed. Neither militarily nor economically, 8,000 nuclear warheads is a long way from paralysis. But thanks for your call. Julian is also in the UK, and he wants to talk about the Rohingya. Julian, welcome to the show.
Hello there, George.
Welcome, sir.
Great to see you last week, and best of luck with the new campaign.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, there are Muslims being massacred in Burma. There's Muslims being massacred in the Central African Republic as well. That's another one that's overlooked. And Muslims and Christians have been massacred in Palestine for decades now. But the custodians of the two holy mosques are busy killing other Muslims in Yemen or encouraging people to go and kill other Muslims in Syria.
So that's the whole case, Julian. You've just made the whole case in one little soundbite. Absolute brilliance. Go ahead.
Well, it seems as simple and as ridiculous as that.
It is.
Ready to kill other Muslims and not lift a finger to defend the real...
Who knew they had an air force, Julian? Who knew they had an air force and all this weaponry? Certainly not the people in Gaza.
Yeah.
The people in Gaza who were under merciless bombardment, thousands of them killed, hundreds of those were small children, and Saudi Arabia didn't even send a bullet, never mind threaten to use anything of its own.
Yep. That's it. Every time there's a so-called jihad, it's always against one of America's enemies.
Well, perfect. Julian, you and I need to talk, mate. We're on the same page here. This is exactly true. These so-called jihads are launched against enemies who just happen to also be enemies of Israel and the United States. Suspicious or what? We've lost Julian there, but that was a brilliant call, a great contribution. He's talking about the Rohingya, but he's talking also about the overarching point, which is very much, very well made. Now, the next caller is Rafiq, also in the UK. We don't seem to be hearing from the rest of the world much so far. Rafiq in the UK, welcome.
Well, George, you all right?
You want to talk about Yemen, brother, yeah?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Now, Yemen, I think, don't you think it's a part of Israel and America to sweep it up, like, you know, you can see the pattern to knock Syria down, then they're going to Yemen, then they've got Iraq and everything. They're knocking everybody down to make Israel powerful. I mean, they were in the background or backdoor of Syria, the ICL, where they're not even dropping a bomb on anything on Israel. So they're, I think, they're all one group, like, just sweeping the whole area.
Well, they're not knocking down the Yemenis. They're knocking down children and women and old people and civilian people. But they're certainly not going to sweep up the Ansarullah forces. Not at all. In fact, they daren't. Nobody will put a foot on the ground in Yemen because the Yemeni fighters would whip them. And that's absolutely sure. That's why none of them are prepared to do so. So what we have is the most powerful countries in the world using the most deadly and most expensive weaponry and the most expensive aeroplanes to pound the poorest country in the Middle East and kill men, women, and children and not affect the military balance one iota because they cannot, because they don't have the wherewithal, they don't have the guts to enter Yemen and fight the Yemeni forces there. Thanks for that, Rafiq. I've got to take a short break for a short news bulletin. Just 3 minutes. Don't go away. God willing, I'll still be here when you get back. You're watching Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Still, despite everything and everything that they have thrown at us, still the voice of the voiceless. And we're giving voice this evening to the poor people of Yemen under savage and relentless, bloody and expensive bombardment, which is killing thousands of them and destroying some of the most beautiful, some of the most precious of the heritage of the Arab people. And we're giving voice to the Rohingya in Burma who are in peril on the sea or being starved and witch hunted, subject of a genocidal, murderous rampage by Burmese nationalism inside their own country. And nobody is lifting a finger to help them, least of all Saudi Arabia. Rahman is on the line in South Africa on the subject of Yemen. Rahman, welcome, brother.
Oh, JazakAllah. Assalamu alaikum to you, George.
Walaikum
salam. To all your good righteous listeners.
Thank you.
I've got a point to make here from the Quran. What it says, these pagan Arabs, they claim that they have become believers. So God tells them, reprimands them, tells them, no, you are not believers, and faith has not even peeped into your hearts, but say that you are verbal Muslims. Unfortunately, the bulk of the Muslims, they are like a dead body. The Prophet Muhammad said, if there are a body that was alive, they would feel the pain. But because they are dead bodies, unfortunately, they cannot feel the pain of a fellow human who's injured or get killed or murdered. And then the Quran says that they claim that they believe in, it says, if you rule unjustly against a people, that in the sight of God, you are not a true believer. You are not a believer in the sight of God. You are worse than a pagan. The point is, the backward Muslim that do not understand Islam, the converts, like our forefathers, who were simple Muslims, when they entered Islam, and they have this outlook about these pagan Arabs, that they are the custodians of Islam, because the language of the Quran came into their tongue. Now, for that reason, they've given these pagan Arabs a feather in the head, thinking that whatever they say, whether right or wrong, they must accept because they are the so-called progeny or followers or the tribe of the Holy Prophet being Arabs. I do not blame America for what America is doing to them, because if you are a salesman and you want to sell a product and you find someone that's a sucker that you can sell something to that is worth nothing, is the buyer or the sucker that must be blamed because he's been taken for a fool. Another point is these so-called custodians of Mecca and Medina, they are real pagans. They have no clue what is Islam. They are godless people. Because if they were truly true believers in God, in this holy month that they think that they believe in, they would cease fire and would try to make peace and reconcile with each other. But unfortunately, there are more bloodshed, more bombs, and they're killing innocent children. And the Quran also says that they claim they believe in, if you kill people unjustly, without any justification, then you also become an unbeliever. The problem is these Muslims, they must wake up. Like I told you so many times in your program, these Muslims must start reading the Quran. They must stop believing in Arab and Arabic language. They must read the Quran even if it's in English or French or Italian, so they themselves can be informed. Because these Arab suckers, they take these Muslims who are non-Arabs as fools and think whatever they say is gospel. These Muslims must wake up and they must stop going to Mecca. They must stop going for pilgrimage until such time God replaced those evil leaders. Thank you very much, George.
Well, a very powerful contribution, Rahman, as always. I don't agree with all of it. And I certainly don't regard the Arabs as a whole in any way responsible for the actions of these brigands, these tyrants, these dictators who rule the country that they called after themselves, Saudi Arabia, who are in charge of the destruction of Yemen. I say in charge, of course, the ultimate boss is elsewhere in the United States, but they're doing the dirty work. And this dictatorship, I don't call them pagan. It's not for me to use such words, but I do call them hypocrites. That they are hypocrites, to me, is beyond contradiction. They are hypocrites in their personal behavior. They are hypocrites in their public behavior. They are hypocrites in their political behavior. They have now developed a de facto alliance that doesn't just involve the United States, but involves also Israel. And you know, anybody who claims to be the custodian of the two holy mosques, to be in an effective, objective alliance with the occupier of the third holy mosque in Jerusalem, well, if that's not hypocrisy, I really don't know what is. Let's hear from Robert in Scotland, also on Yemen. Go ahead, Robert.
Evening, George.
Good to hear from you. Go ahead.
Good to hear from you as well. Well, basically, I don't think that the Saudi regime are going to stop. I mean, it's not a very optimistic prediction about the future, but I don't think they're going to stop because they want the blood of the Shia to run down the streets of Sana'a just because they think it will not stain as badly as Sunni blood. This Wahhabist Takfiri regime that is in Saudi Arabia is oppressing the Shia Muslims in its own country and has now just invaded Yemen with ground tanks and infantry, as well as bombing them from the sky, just to kill theirs. They are fearing a Shia state, well, and pretty much a non-existent fear. They are fearing the rise of the Houthis in Yemen. They think this is going to be a threat to them, when in actual reality, if they didn't oppress the Shia world in the Middle East and in Saudi Arabia and in Iran and in Iraq and in Yemen, they would have nothing to fear.
Well, of course, they want this sectarian narrative to prevail, but it doesn't hold much water, Robert. The religious sectarian makeup of Yemen is quite complex, but it doesn't fit into the Sunni Shia narrative. The Houthis, the Ansarullah forces that are loyal, the former army loyal to the former president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, they belong, one are Houthi, the other are Zaidi, and the previous prime minister who's just been overthrown is also a Zaidi. The loyalties of the vast majority of people in Yemen are to the Zaidi and Houthi sects. Now, the reality is that all of them have dealt very happily with Saudi Arabia in the past. Indeed, on the eve of the demise of the late King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, they were all there in Riyadh talking peace. The immediately deposed president is now in exile in Saudi Arabia. But the previous exiled president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, was also in exile in Saudi Arabia. And it's his army that Saudi Arabia is now presumably trying to destroy.
Of course,
but
yeah.
Of course, the attempt is made to make this a sectarian conflict, to make it into a proxy conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But Iran has nothing to do with this. They say that Iran has supplied weapons to the Houthi, but none of them are able to produce a single photograph of that.
Of course. Yeah.
And the Houthi don't need weapons. Nobody in Yemen needs weapons. They've all got weapons. They've all always had weapons. They're the most warrior-like of people. Robert, thanks for your call. Great as always. Mo is in the UK, again on Yemen. Mo, welcome.
Hi, George.
Hi there, go ahead.
Well, this Yemen issue, this is all about oil and gas. There's been a lot of oil and gas discovered in Yemen and also in Somalia. Remember these terrorist groups, so-called terrorist groups, Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram in Nigeria, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, and also this Houthi, which is not a terrorist group. But all these guys appeared only when oil and gas is concerned. In Nigeria, Shell and BP, the net beneficiaries of oil and gas exploration, have created a group so they can continue exploiting and robbing the country. Same as in Somalia. The Somalia-Kenya border, a lot of oil and gas has been found. And the only effective way to ethnically cleanse oil and gas-rich areas is to create a terrorist group and call it, you know, call it a war. And same is going on in Yemen. This Saudis are proxies. They do not get out of bed till about midday, so they're not flying the aircraft. It's all seconded personnel from United States and Britain who are flying the aircraft and doing the bombing runs. The only reason a ground invasion hasn't taken place is because the Pakistani soldiers seconded to Saudi Arabia have not been given permission by the Pakistani government to invade Yemen. So the net beneficiary and the sponsors of this war are oil and gas companies.
Well, that may very well be true, but that doesn't mean those companies invented these conflicts. I'm certain that neither Shell nor BP invented Boko Haram. Boko Haram exists as a trend, as a tendency which exists in Nigeria and exists in many, many parts of the world, of takfiri, fanatic, sectarian extremism. And they have found a home with the ISIS. And Boko Haram have now declared themselves a part of the ISIS. And the area that they at least control much of in Borno has now become a part of Baghdadi's caliphate. So I don't think you should be too formulaic about this. Of course, oil companies and gas companies can sometimes profit from people being chased away from an area. But they don't need people chased away from an area. They don't need war in order to make profit. In fact, in many respects, war can rob them of profit. Iraq is a good example, and Libya is a good example. If they thought they were going to make a lot of money out of Iraq, once they had invaded and occupied it, they've discovered rather differently. It's taken more than a decade for Iraq to begin to produce profits from the oil sector again. And Libya will never, perhaps never do so again. Libya is broken into pieces, and they were making more profits before they supported the NATO bombardment and destruction of Libya, and now they're not making any profits at all. And they can't even go there because they'd be lucky to get out of the airport alive. That's the facts of the matter, Mo, don't you think?
George, yeah. This, I'll tell you now, when Iraq fell in 2003 in the illegal war, a lot of oil left Basra and was not accounted for. The same
sure.
is happening in Benghazi.
Sure.
A lot of oil is leaving, and Shell and BP are net beneficiaries of this.
Well,
so
I don't know.
Do you think they don't benefit from conflict?
Well, of course, companies can benefit from conflict, but they can also lose a lot from conflict. And I'm certain that in Libya, whilst, of course, there's oil that gets stolen and there's irregular oil, of course, but if they had not supported the destruction of Libya and its balkanization into many parts, and ditto with Iraq, they would have actually been making more money, not less. Declan is in the UK. Let's hear from him. He's always worth it. Declan, welcome.
You mentioned Waterloo, but I think you picked the wrong war. You should have picked the Spanish Civil War instead, because we're getting a Guernica a day. And just like the Spanish Civil War, there's a lot of bushfires. It's a bad word, but, you know, the Basques, the Catalans, and the Ethiopians. And what we have here is the same thing. all these places are burning, and the Adolf Hitlers of today hope to gain for their own pathologies in the long run. Frankly, George, I know people praise your English, but when Saudi Arabia is mentioned, your English is not good enough to describe the depths of their depravities. To link Saudi Arabia and Myanmar, you may remember a few weeks ago they dragged some maid from Myanmar screaming and shouting to cut her head off. Now, we have to cut the head off Saudi Arabia and the hydras behind Saudi Arabia. If we go back to the Spanish Civil War and the war which followed it, Russia is still standing, but they're trying to weaken it. But the other side is not there at all. All we get is a couple of crumbs. You know, we have about three journalists in England who are worth reading. You might know one or two more, only one or two more. The United Nations, you know, it was set up by the United States. And if you see what they did with Syria, not allowing Iran in, for example, and, you know, just dancing to America's tune. So the way I see it today is we stand where people stood in the 1930s. Similar terrible things are going on. There's a much smaller group than in the 1930s rallying against the new fascism, which is the United States and its puppets. And it doesn't look very good. In Latakia at the moment, in northern Syria, they're mobilizing the women for a last stand. So, it doesn't look good. And the brave few men, you mentioned religion, but there's a thing in the Bible about Lazarus who goes to hell. And he wants to come back to warn his brothers against, you know, change your ways or you'll end up in hell. But God tells him, look, they won't listen to you. And Saudi Arabia, the United States, contrary to what one of your speakers said, they won't change their ways until they're made change their ways. So that's what I have to say.
Well, as powerful as always, Declan, thanks for that call. A very powerful series of charges there. And a reproach to me about the insufficiency of my eloquence in the English language when it comes to the depths of depravity of the Al Saud royal dictatorship in Saudi Arabia. It's a cutting charge. It's one of which I have never before been accused. I'll have to brush up my vocabulary. Saeed is in London on the same subject, Saudi Arabia and Yemen. Saeed, welcome.
Hi, George.
Welcome, go ahead.
Yes, you mentioned earlier about the Houthis and the Zaydis that this war in Yemen is not a sectarian war, which is, I do agree with that. But a lot of people seem to be blaming Saudi Arabia for what's happening now in Yemen. But shouldn't we be asking first, why are the Houthis doing this at the first place? Why do the Houthis speak for all of Yemen? Why do they think that they can speak for all of Yemen? 23
Well, they definitely can't.
People.
They definitely they can't. No, they so cannot.
Not, yeah,
they
so
cannot. And but yeah. By the way, Saeed, I don't think that they have ever claimed that they could. What you have is a revolution. You have a civil war going on in Yemen, and it's never very wise to interfere in other people's civil wars. We have an alliance between the Houthi and the army formerly loyal to Ali Abdullah Saleh, and they were trying to come to power. That's what happens.
That's right. But shouldn't we be fighting the Houthis? Because
why?
The Houthis are the rebels. Aren't they the terrorists now?
But there's armed rebels. There's armed
legitimate government.
Brother, there's armed rebels in many places in the world. We can't fight them. They either win or they don't win. It's an internal Yemeni affair. It was so internal that Saudi Arabia was holding peace talks right up until the night before the demise of King Abdullah in Riyadh. So they know that it's an internal political conflict. I have no, by the way, I have no flag or candle in this fight. I don't care who rules Yemen.
Yes.
I just care that Yemen is one country, that it is not partitioned and broken up like so many other Arab countries. And I care that any government there should be broad and representative of all the tendencies, the sects, the political colors that are there. That's what I want to see in Yemen. It's surely not beyond the wit of the Arab League to bring together all these parties and broker such an agreement. But the reason why there isn't is because Saudi Arabia and America, with Israeli support, have decided that they're going to make a stand over Yemen. Am I right?
I wouldn't include Israel, because I don't think Israel has to do anything with it. But this is...
Saeed, I can't let you away with that, brother, because Israel said they were. Israel said they were involved in intelligence cooperation with the American-Saudi bombardment of Yemen. They said so, not me.
Why are the Iranians allowed to be in Iraq and Syria, but so much hoo-ha when Saudi Arabia tries to protect our borders?
But Saudi Arabia is not protecting its borders. It's bombing somebody else's country. Now, if you want to say to me, let's withdraw all foreign forces from every Arab country, I'll be with you. But you're not really saying that, Saeed, are you? You're not saying the Americans have got to get out of Saudi Arabia. The Americans have got to get out of Qatar. The Americans have got to get out of Jordan. You're not saying that the foreign forces have to get out of Syria. You're only saying the Iranians need to get out of Syria. So the Chechens and the Mongolians and every other Tom, Dick, and Harry can pour over the Turkish border and destroy Syria. That's not the foreign forces that you have in mind. Saeed, based on very limited evidence, I have a feeling that you're a hypocrite too, just like the regime you are defending. Now you can continue this discussion on Twitter at @comment_PressTV. God willing, I'll be back here at the same time next week for more comment, discussion, and debate. It's been marvelous. Thank you.
Hello, just comment your name and the picture with that number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You'll be directly put through this phone number and then we'll be back.